Welcome to Culture Cryptids, the horror podcast and occasional Barbara Crampton Appreciation Hour.
Hello, hello, and welcome back yet again to Culture Cryptids.
That's right. We're back, and I would say better than ever, but we'll see how this goes, and then we can make that a decision.
I like we're starting off strong.
This is very strong.
We've obviously become much more confident in our off time. Well, if you may have forgotten, I'm JD, and I'm back to be your final girl.
Oh, that was entirely unnecessary.
Yeah, it was. I'm too gay to function.
That's only okay when I say it. And I am Corey, the long-awaited and yet not at all wanted sequel to your least favorite franchise film.
Oh, I thought it was going to be the most unwanted sequel to your favorite franchise, but you decided to go your least favorite. Like, that makes it so much worse.
Right? It is, like, terrible.
So which franchise is that?
Oh, like my least favorite franchise? Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd probably be another season of American Horror Story, but, like...
Oh my God.
Nobody wants that.
Like,
no, people do. People watch it.
As we've talked about before, Ryan Murphy. Ooh, yeah. Ooh, buddy. Like, strong ideas can start off a season strong, but doesn't know how to land the fucking plane. Also, Emma Roberts. We can leave it there.
She keeps doing her thing.
White girl's gonna white. Anyway, how long has it been?
You know, a very long time, over a year.
It's been over a year.
Over a year since I've been sitting in this room doing this. So I'm very excited to be back.
I am as well. What have you been up to in this time where we've been gone?
Well, a few things. I've mostly been doing an X-Men podcast. So that's been taking up some of my time.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it sounds real nerdy enough for me. I know. And then trying to get through... I would say the end of the pandemic, but your sources may vary about whether or not it's actually over. But yeah, just getting through things, like surviving, trying to travel as much as possible now that places are back open again.
Yeah, it's fun times.
Yeah, yeah. What about you?
The world is not burning at all. No.
No, you have been far more productive than I have on this front, though.
I don't know if productive is the right word to use.
I feel like it's pretty productive.
Well, I have been living life and living so much of it, so much life all the time. But I did help launch a podcast network for our local LGBTQIA+ organization, and I am engineering two of those. One of them is the Knox Pride podcast, which is the official podcast of said organization, and the Curious Table, which is a roundtable discussion podcast. And then all of my other time is taking up doing other things for said LGBTQIA+ organization.
That's right. You've been doing a lot with the organization.
Yeah.
Which is good. They've really grown a lot to you, and it's been really nice to watch.
And it's a labor of love. I wouldn't do it if I didn't want to. And it's good to help our community.
Yeah. Always.
Because there's so many people who could chip in and who don't, and cis white gay men.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
Yeah. We're terrible. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
That's right.
We are here to talk about horror, which is something we both love.
That's true. Yeah. Let's focus on that for a bit.
Let's focus on that.
Because we, as we do end up at the end of, 2023, it's kind of like a place where, like, what did you think about horror this year?
So when we start talking about some of our favorites of the year, I feel like there was a big change that happened that probably started with one of my favorite films of last year. So I'm going to talk about that again. So I apologize in advance. And I think that horror is in a much better, open, freer place this year and then going forward than it may have been in the last few years.
Interesting. What do you mean by that?
Okay, well, do we want to just jump right in?
I guess I meant, like, where do you see horror this year compared to previous years? And, like, when you mean freer, what do you mean by freer?
So I think a good example is, let's talk about Cabin in the Woods. Great movie, but it suffers from the Joss Whedon of it all, of being very self-aware and being funny by kind of making fun of things.
Okay.
And I feel like horror, we've been in the last few years, like anything that's kind of even comedic horror is poking fun of itself. It's like, this is funny, but like, come on. And I think that at this point we're allowed to be campy again, mm-hmm. for camp's sake, and we don't have to apologize about it.
So you think it's more genuine?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. I think I can see that. And I think a lot of things this year have felt very genuine and come from a genuine place. And I think that's been building since last year too. So yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah. Like, we got a lot of product out of the beginning and kind of the really, really rough part of the pandemic, that was good content, but it was like, looking back at it, I'm like, man, that's a little downer. It's a little sad. Mm-hmm. And I think that now we're able to kind of, yeah, be freer and genuine with it and not feel embarrassed about that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing to say. I think especially this year, for me, looking at a lot of things that came out, it was far more interesting. Some of the stuff that didn't get theatrical releases, mm-hmm. felt even more genuine and like more real compared to some of the stuff that did. And that's not to say that any of the stuff that did is bad. I think that just, it was kind of interesting to see what people are doing. And yeah, I think freeing is a good way to do it. I think you're getting a lot more unique ideas and a lot of stuff that's coming out of not just being another sequel, which, don't get me wrong, I go see sequels. This is not a, you know, franchises exist for a reason, and a lot of them are old staples that are delightful. But I do think a lot of original stuff came out this year that was really fun to see.
Yeah, and I think that streaming is probably one of the best things that could have ever happened to horror, because it opens up a lot more avenues to people who wouldn't have been able to produce content. But I think that also, yet again, this year, Hollywood discovered that, holy shit, horror movies cost a fraction of the price of a lot of other films, and can make their money back tenfold.
Yeah.
Super
and
easily.
We see that all the time. Yeah. As people talk about what films were successful versus not successful. And when you see the gross of what these films made, you're like, oh, like, horror movies are making a fraction of the price as in these big blockbusters, but they cost a fraction of that mm-hmm. price too. So you can get a good return on it, which is kind of sad when you think about it too. But I mean, it's good for those of us that really like to see this stuff. Yeah, I guess that puts us in the quiz. Like, what's kind of a chance for us to talk about what we loved this year?
Yeah, I think that coming back and it being the end of the year is a great place. We, you know, we did this last time too. Mm-hmm. We talked about what our faves of the year had been. Mm-hmm. And I think, much like last time, we had a lot of overlap in them.
And then we have some that we were just like, well, no, that didn't work. You know, it's kind of fun to see where we come together in this and then also where we differ.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely have very similar tastes, but also very different. How about you get us started?
Okay. So I think I'm going to start with one that was on both of our lists. And I think, I just feel like it has to be here. And it really is one of the movies that probably has stuck with the most people the longest this year. And that's Megan.
You mean Mithrigan?
No, the movie's name is Megan.
No, it's Mithrigan.
No.
Yeah, Megan. It was great. Allison Williams, love yeah. her. Directed by Gerard Johnstone. Mm-hmm. Written by Akilah Cooper and James Wan, right. who also did Malignant. Yeah,
which is, I think, one of our favorite movies from last year, too.
Like, it was my favorite. And it was, that was kind of where I was like, okay, we're allowed to be ridiculous and campy again.
Yes.
And it'd be fun.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and the director also did you see Housebound from a few years ago? Mm-mm. It's a really hard to talk about film in a lot of ways, because it's so just like genre bending in a really fun way and very unexpected way with a lot of the things that happen in it. And like, cause it's, I think it's a 2014 movie.
Okay.
And it takes place, it's a New Zealand horror comedy. And the basic premise is that there's a woman that has to return to her family home and live with her mom because she's been put on house arrest. So that's like begins the story of what is happening. And then she starts to hear something in the walls. And that gives away nothing, but I'm going to tell you, don't read anything about this movie if you want to watch it.
Okay.
Just watch it because it's so worth seeing. So as soon as I saw that was a director too, I was like, oh no, Megan knows what it's going to be. It's going to be genuine and it's, but not take itself too seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those who may not have seen the movie from IMDb, our favorite source.
Oh no, we're back already.
Yes. Mathrigan is a robotics engineer at a toy company, builds a lifelike doll that begins to take on a life of its own.
That is the most basic of explanations for the film, but also, yeah, pretty solid. The movie is so good. Because Michaela Cooper, who wrote the script for it, she really understands like what AI is and like what it learns, like what it learns from the internet and like what bots learn and things like that. And it comes out in the most surprising ways. Like there's the song Bulletproof and that whole sequence is people were laughing and I was like, oh no. And you get immediately like what is happening there, that this little AI doll has learned all the wrong lessons from the internet.
But good point to say, if this is your first time listening to us, we are very spoilery. So if you've not watched any of these movies, you may want to watch them and then come back. If not, and you don't care about it, then listen onward.
I'm trying not to be spoilery.
Oh, no.
Going to go into it? Okay.
You know me.
I know what you are. I know what you are.
No, the Bulletproof thing was really great. I went and saw it. It had been out for a few weeks at this point. Mm-hmm. But when I went to see it, the theater was still packed. And it was one of those, you know, to kind of be, it was one of those movie going experiences where we all knew what we were there for. Everybody knew we were in for a fun time and we all kind of, everyone was laughing and having fun. And that's what the movie should be, especially with some horror movies. Horror movies should be a fun shared experience.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Megan was great to see in a theater with a big audience and people who are just really ready to see this movie.
I do have to clarify though. So I went to... She's a robot. She's not a puppet. For my birthday, one of my friends took me to one of those RuPaul's Drag Race like traveling shows that they do. And one of the drag queens did a Mathrigan number. But the song that she picked and the way that she presented it was as if she was a puppet. And I was so mad, like unreasonably mad. Like I wanted to storm down to the stage and be like, stop. You don't know what you're doing.
She's not a puppet.
She's not a puppet.
She's a robot.
She's a robot. She's a robot girl.
It is definitely a very fun movie and a pretty gory movie in places. And they cut away, if you don't see the unrated version, they cut away really well so that you get these like glimpses of, oh no, that's going to go really badly, to know exactly how brutal the scene is without showing. And I think that's the brilliance of the director, that can do a cut that was unrated and then also do a cut that was...
A PG-13 cut.
It was going to make more money.
Yeah. And I love that because it opens it up to a wider audience, like, you know, younger people who may just be dipping their feet into horror.
Yes.
And it does make you have to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But nothing was lost in that PG-13 cut.
I don't think so at all. That was my first pick.
Okay.
Your turn. Tossing it over to you.
So that was on my list as well. My next pick, which I also think is on your list, was Infinity Pool.
Oh, God. Yes.
Cronenberg's gonna Cronenberg.
This movie was good.
So Infinity Pool, written and directed by Brandon Cronenberg and starring Alexander Skarsgård and Mia Goth.
Yes. Fantastic performances. This is another one that I didn't see until it was on streaming. So I didn't get to watch this one until I got to stream it.
I made it a point to go see it the week that it came out in the theater.
I'm very sad I didn't, but at the same time, being able to go, what the fuck, in the privacy of my own house was probably a better experience for everyone else, because there were so many what the fuck moments that happened in this that I was just like, okay, I'm on board. Okay.
So the story of this one, for those who may not be aware, from, again, our favorite source, IMDb, James and M. Foster are enjoying an all-inclusive beach vacation in the fictional island of La Tolca when a fatal accident exposes the resort's perverse subculture of hedonistic tourism, reckless violence, and surreal horrors.
Yeah, that's vague enough to give you the gist without going into how these things happen.
I also enjoyed how it's not a really dialogue heavy movie.
No.
And it's very atmospheric. And especially whenever some of the stuff starts to go down and it's more about what you're seeing and like the sounds that are happening around it and not people talking kind of amplifies it a little bit more. I enjoyed that aspect of it. And of course it's got, you know, the trademark Cronenberg, you know, body horror. Like I want to know what Brandon Cronenberg's life was like growing up.
Well, I mean, we know a little bit about it based on some of the things that his father has said. But I think that both Cronenbergs really do a lot with body horror.
Mm-hmm.
But Brandon Cronenberg seems to be really, really more interested in the, like, kind of the more psychological aspects
yes.
of body horror and how that, like, these things play how the mind plays into the body rather than, I think, you see David Cronenberg kind of do the opposite, which is like how the transformation of the body leads to a transformation of the mind, if that makes sense.
No, it's very much the exterior informing what's happening inside, whereas with Brandon, it is very much the what's happening inside is influencing the exterior.
Yeah.
I would venture to say that for me anyway, all of Brandon's movies so far, all explorations on identity and how yes. we perceive ourselves.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a good through line in all of them.
And I found like, I didn't realize how much audiences did not like this movie.
Yeah.
Like how much people did not like Infinity Pool. I love Infinity Pool. Like I think that it's again, one of those that are just like, just wild and a little bit like out there in the perfect kind of way for this mm-hmm. sort of movie. Because again, you get this sort of like, it's not super gory, but it is disturbing.
Yes.
And I think you could have movies like that without having that level of blood and gore, but still being like, oh, this is very disturbing to watch. But yet, I want to know what happens next.
I mean, it's worth the price of admission alone just to be able to hear Mia Goth scream. Like whenever they're in the car and they're just kind of like slowly like following him.
Oh,
and she's
yeah.
like, James! James!
Yeah.
I've been told I do a good Mia Goth.
You do. It's a pretty good Mia Goth. Yeah, I think that one is definitely another one that's worth watching just for kind of the like, oh, this is very disturbing mm-hmm. rather than scary.
And I think that of what his output has been at this point, I think that it's my favorite so far. I mean, I do really like Possessor, but I think that this edged it out just a little bit more.
Yeah, I really liked this one.
Yeah. What's next on your list?
So I don't think this one's on your list.
Okay.
But I'm going to throw in for another kind of, for another horror comedy, and it's Totally Killer.
It's an honorable mention
yeah,
for me.
I really liked this movie. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a lot of fun, and it was written by David Matalon and Sasha Pearl Raver, and directed by Nanochka Khan. I think that's how you pronounce mm-hmm. her name. And she did a lot of work on one of my other like favorite shows, which was like Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
Love it.
Yeah. So she did a lot of work on that before it came to this really fun comedy slasher that felt like a very good throwback to 80s films. And there's a good reason for that, because it involves time travel.
I love when sci-fi and horror come together, it's a beautiful, beautiful
yeah.
marriage.
And I have to say that like one of my favorite films that have been out in like the last decade are like Happy Death Day. And this gave me the same vibes mm-hmm. of Happy Death Day in a really fun way. So I was like all about this when I watched it. And this one didn't go to theaters. It was just straight up streaming.
Yeah, Amazon, I believe, correct?
Yes, mm-hmm. I believe that's where I watched it. And it stars Kieran Shipka, mm-hmm. who is Sabrina the Teenage Witch in the new Sabrina show, and also has Julie Bowen as her mother, that plays her mother, and Lachlan Monroe as her dad. And you're just like, oh no, these parents are like, you can definitely see what they were in the 80s. So I really liked it. And then here is, because we were doing this again, I will give you the IMDb description of it just for you. When the infamous Sweet 16 killer returns 35 years after his first murder spree to claim another victim, 17-year-old Jamie accidentally travels back in time to 1987, determined to stop the killer before he can start. It's real ridiculous, but really, really fun. And it's got some pretty good kills in it. Like, it's got some really creative kind of, you can tell they had a really fun time doing the slasher aspect of this.
The stuff at the cabin is probably my favorite.
Oh yes, it's so good. And it's just the whole fact that it's like, you built a time machine. Not, the main character does not build this time machine. Another character does. You built a time machine for your science fair project in high school.
In high school.
Okay. All right. We're just going to roll with it. Because it is such an absurd like thing that everyone sort of recognizes how weird and absurd it is while it's happening. But yeah.
I love any type of time travel movie that is not too concerned with the mechanics of how the time travel works.
You got a photo booth that happens to be a time travel machine. All right, let's go. I really enjoyed the kind of the 80s stuff that was happening, and then also some of the stuff in present day that was going on at the same time. So like, yeah. Fun times.
Kiernan Shipka was really great in it. And I love when people, like, again, she was in the new Sabrina, the Teenage Witch show, or the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And prior to that, you know, I'd only ever seen her in Mad Men, which was, of course, a more dramatic role. But she does comedy really well.
Yeah. She has this kind of short-tempered, but understandably so, with putting up with ridiculous things, including all of these 80s teenagers. And it is really funny to see that culture shock. I think they do that really well between a teenager today and a teenager in the 80s. Like, how you can be like, oh no, that's pretty funny.
I think I really like, what is it, when she first sees her mom and she's like, mamacita. Yeah. It's such a really good tone for how it's going to go down.
Yeah, it definitely goes down that way.
So my next one is The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, which I watched on Shudder. It was... You know, you and I both like to do for October, watch a new piece of horror media every day of that month. You want to know how many I did this year?
How many?
One.
Well, is this it?
this is the your one. Yeah.
So I'm really sad because I actually haven't been able to see this film, but it's been on my list for a long time. But I didn't get to watch it in October, but it's still on my list. I'm going to try to get it before the end of the year. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's really well done. It was written and directed by Bomani J. Story and stars DeLeon Hayes. Oh, words are hard sometimes. But the synopsis of this one, Vicaria is a brilliant teenager who believes death is a disease that can be cured. After the brutal murder of her brother, she embarks on a dangerous journey to bring him back to life. The tone of this, doing this type of story, like, I mean, it's a great take on like a modern take on like a Frankenstein story, and adding kind of like, you know, racial issues and racial relations into this, it could have been very easy to be really heavy handed about it, but it's done so incredibly well.
Yeah. When I first like saw like the poster for it, I was like, oh, is this kind of like horror is kind of what I was thinking. And then like I watched a little bit more about it, and then I was like, wait, oh, this is a modern retelling of Frankenstein. Okay, I get this. I'm all in for it. I just wish that I had seen it before now, but I didn't get a chance to get to it this year. I feel bad.
And I feel like the way that it ends kind of sets it up that there could possibly be another one.
Oh, okay.
And it's one of those situations where I wouldn't mind it because Vicaria is such a compelling character. I would definitely watch another film that takes place in this universe with the same character.
Okay.
For sure.
I mean, that is always fine when you're just like, opens up this world for sort of things. Because a lot of my favorite movies feel that way. I do want to see this. It looks really good. I'm just sad I haven't, honestly.
And some of the kind of creature effects in it, I guess it would, I mean, it's weird whenever you describe a person as a creature, but in a Frankenstein story, that's appropriate.
Yeah, that's
but
appropriate.
The makeup and kind of the look is phenomenal. It works really, really well. Very effective.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to add this one to my list to see as soon as possible.
Yeah. I'm sorry that I picked kind of such a downer of a one after we just got through talking about a bunch of fun.
I mean, any retelling of Frankenstein is going, it should be a little bit of a downer. And I love this concept of the kind of like the way that this film is set up. So I can't imagine that I'm not going to really enjoy it.
You bring up a good point there because I feel like a lot of the more recent modern Frankenstein stories or just kind of straight up retellings of Frankenstein that are period pieces are too concerned with being sexy.
Yeah. And this is like a, it's not a sexy story.
No.
If you want to be sexy, go tell a Dracula story. But you know, but yeah, Frankenstein is not, it's a story about your own hubris and how that you have decided that you are a better creator than nature in a lot of ways, or in the time period, better creator than God. Like that's the concept of it. But yeah, like there's a lot of like sorrow and terror in Frankenstein and in the best adaptations as well of it.
It's because it's gothic, but just because something is gothic does not mean it has to be sexy.
No,
and I know that that's shocking coming from me. But
not all gothic needs to be sexy. No. Yeah.
Well, what's next on your list?
You know, okay. So I think I'm saving like our top picks for last maybe. But I'm going to go with one that was a kind of a surprise for me when I watched it, because I did not think that this was going to be good. I didn't really think much about it. No One Will Save You. A film called No One Will Save You. And you've seen that one, right?
I have not. It's on.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Now yeah. that I've got this new sound system and this new giant television, I'm going to watch it.
Okay. It's really worth it. It's one of those movies that I was like, I don't know where this is going to go when the film started. And it's directed by Brian Duffield, written and directed by Brian Duffield. And he wrote the original The Babysitter movie, the one with
Samara Weaving.
Yeah, Samara Weaving. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love those movies.
Yeah. No, he wrote the first one. He also did, he wrote Love and Monsters from mm-hmm. 2020, and then also Underwater. So he's got
a very, very underrated film.
I really like that movie.
I love Underwater.
Yeah. And there's kind of like the main cast is basically Caitlin Dever in it. And she's kind of like the one person we follow through this. And this movie was really interesting to me because it's almost like no dialogue in it. And like,
I love that.
About 20 minutes in, I was like, nobody is talking in this movie. This is really strange. And you have this kind of like, I'll read the IMDb description because I think that's the best way to describe them if we're going to go that route. But you have to give me a second because I don't have them automatically pulled up the way you do.
I'm sorry that I like to be prepared.
Yeah. So the premise is like an exiled, anxiety-ridden homebody must battle an alien who's found its way into her home. But like, that's a very simple explanation because you're just like, the entire time you're like, what is actually happening? What is the reality here? What is going on in her brain? Why is this woman like this? Because it drops you a lot of hints through the film about her and her backstory in mm-hmm. this town. And I was very pleasantly surprised with it because I think alien movies, it's really easy to make a bad alien movie.
For sure.
It is. And this one was really good.
Because it's alien home invasion, right?
It's, yeah. But also there's like a lot of layers going on
okay.
here. And I will
shockingly, this has not been spoiled for me.
Yeah. I'm not spoiling it for you. I will say that the ending when it came out was a really divisive ending. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have like bickered about it. There's been a little bit of a discourse about the ending.
Well, that's when you know you've made something good.
Personally, I loved it. I watched it with people that were just like, oh, that. And like, they're people that I really like, and we usually like the same things. You know, this is not just like somebody who's just like doesn't like horror. So I think that's really fun. I think you can really talk about the ending, and that is even better for me when you have that kind of. I'm trying not to spoil it for you because I know you haven't seen it.
It might be one of those things that I kind of want to start toying around with, maybe recording while watching things and just kind of the thing like you like ideally with other people, but I'm gonna give it a try by myself first because I do like I'm sure this shocks no one, but I talk to myself a lot when I'm at home by myself and when I watch things. So
surprised by that, really.
We'll see what happens there. I've got that Omni mic I can play with; it'll be great.
Yeah.
So the next on my list, and I did not go in any type of order at all, but mm-hmm. I kind of see what you're doing now. So I'm trying to think if I want to rearrange mine. Yes, going to rearrange it a little bit.
Okay.
The next one that I will talk about, because I'm a huge sucker for a good holiday horror movie. We all know how I love Krampus, is It's a Wonderful Knife, which just came out a few weeks ago.
I literally, when you told me you had seen it, I was like, okay, I'll watch it. Cause you were like, oh, it's so good. So I just watched this a few days ago at the time of recording this.
So just a little of information about the movie. It stars Jane Wittop, Joel McHale and Justin Long, which at this point, can we say that Justin Long is a scream queen and or no, king?
I was actually thinking that when I was watching it. I was like, he's a scream queen. He's this a scream is queen. Where we're at now.
Yeah, yeah. He's done enough. He's put in the work.
He's put in the work.
He's a scream queen.
Yeah, but he's been doing horror films for like 20 years now. Mm-hmm. But everyone always remembers him in the comedies that he's done.
Yeah. I thought you were saying everyone remembers him in the one that shall not be named, but
that too. Yeah. That was kind of his start in it.
Yeah. It's directed by Tyler McIntyre, who did Tragedy Girls, and written by Michael Kennedy, who did Freaky.
I didn't realize it was the same director from mm-hmm. Tragedy Girls.
Yeah.
I love
it. It's a good combination, a mm-hmm. good team, because Freaky's great. Tragedy Girls is great. So mm-hmm. they do a lot of good work together. So a synopsis of this one, I mean, the title kind of gives it away if you're familiar with any type of holiday traditions at all. But mm-hmm. after saving her town from a psychotic killer, Winnie Carruthers' life is less than wonderful. When she wishes she'd never been born, she finds herself in a nightmare parallel universe where, without her, things could be much, much worse. The thing that I love the most about this movie mm-hmm. is so fucking gay.
It's real gay.
So gay.
It leans into it really mm-hmm. well, and like I really appreciate that in this kind of like context. But yeah, I like this one. I don't know if it's my favorite that I've seen, you know, I don't know if it would have like made my like list, mm-hmm. but I liked it a lot. I had a good time with it. Like I remember being halfway through and I'm like, how are you going to do this? Like, you know, but the cast is really good. The story is fun. It's a wonderful life, except with like knives.
I think the thing that I really enjoyed about it was, like, I thought the design of the killer, like the costume, really top notch.
Angel? Yeah, oh, yeah. Really top notch. Really
top notch. Justin Long just decides, like, to be as ridiculous as possible in the best way.
Yeah.
Those are fake teeth, right?
They're not his teeth. Yeah. The teeth are very strange, a very strange addition. And, like, the whole affectation he takes in this film, you were just like, what are you doing?
He understood the assignment.
He did. What are you doing with this? But I really appreciated that because I had all those little like kind of nods and everything to this like idea of this real estate mogul trying to take over your town and what could or couldn't happen based on you just being there.
I've seen a lot of criticisms of this movie mm-hmm. and I think it's because people are trying to be a little too serious about it. This goes back to like what we were talking about with Megan and Malignant and everything. It's another one where it doesn't feel the need to apologize for its level of camp.
Yes.
And I think that a lot of people don't understand that. And because one of the comments I said is like, oh, so one girl isn't in her town and everybody decides to start smoking crack. And I'm like, yeah, that's what's funny about it.
That's why it's funny. Did you miss the assignment here? Like this is the,
I've only seen It's a Wonderful Life a handful of mm-hmm. times. I went and saw it actually. Our local historic theater here does like a showing of it every year. Oh. And so I was like, I'm going to go engage in this Christmas tradition, but it's a ridiculous movie. It's not a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's a Christmas classic. And that's the trick with Christmas movies is they don't have to be great. They just have to hit that feeling.
You know why it's a Christmas classic, right?
No.
Okay, so because it's generally considered by a lot of people to be a terrible movie. I think it's a terrible movie, but it's fun to watch. It did not do well when it first came out.
Okay.
And so lots of stations were looking for content to play during Christmas. And so it was very inexpensive to get the rights to play that one. So it was just because of saturation that it became as popular as it did.
Is this one of those like Turner classics that became a Turner classic because they got the rights to it?
Yes.
Man, I watched all kinds of garbage just being able to do that. I love a lot of that garbage, but yeah.
But I don't think that this movie, It's a Wonderful Life, is terrible, but it will definitely, it'll be a kind of probably a yearly watch for me now, along with Krampus.
I do definitely watch it again. Yeah. For like a Christmas movie, Christmas spooky movies. Cause there are so few of those that are just kind of like worth watching again. So yeah, I'm in for that. I agree.
And the ending is ridiculous, but it's the best kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is the unapologetic camp in this film that everyone's just having a good time. You know, everyone's having a good time in it, and we're just going to lean into that.
We got gay brother. We've got lesbian aunts.
Yeah.
We've got,
oh, God. Well, lesbian aunt that is Catherine Isabella from Ginger Snaps.
Yes.
She also understands the assignment and is great.
And as does Joel McHale.
Like, oh, yeah.
When I saw who was in this movie, I'm like, were they just bored? And they're like, let's do this thing. I wouldn't blame them. If I read that script, I'd be like, I am in.
Yeah.
I am in.
Yeah.
But I think it has broad appeal as well. Like, I took my 17-year-old nephew to see it, and I was so concerned while watching it. I was like, oh my God, he's going to hate this. He's going to think that he's too cool for this. But afterwards, he was like, I love that. I'm like, okay, good, good. It's the right level of ridiculous to hit. Like, what do they say? Things have to have like four quadrant appeal. Is that what it is? I don't know. Like, it hits all the boxes for everyone. So what do you have up next?
Okay. So I had a hard time like narrowing this list down. I want you to know there's so many other things I could talk about, but we're getting into kind of the home stretch. So I think like my film that was a really top contender for number one was, I mean, of course, Talk to Me. I think that's one of the best horror films I've seen in a really long time. And it had some genuinely spooky moments for me.
I loved this movie. I saw it twice in the theater. I've seen it once again. I've made other people watch it since it's been out with the availability to stream it. Man, Australian folks know what they're doing when it comes to horror.
This was, again, one of those very intense films in a really good way, because I wasn't sure what the movie was. And I feel like I say that a lot, but I've been trying to do a bunch of things where I just don't watch a bunch of trailers for movies before I go in to see them. And this was one of those where I was like, oh, it's gotten a lot of buzz. But anytime anything gets a lot of buzz, I could love it or hate it, depending on what it is. And I've gone both ways. But this one, I'm so glad that I didn't read that much about it before I went into this one, because whoa, it's good. And especially since it's written by like YouTubers, like it's Raka Raka is the names. And it's like Danny and Michael Filippo. Is that how you, I don't know if you say that correctly or not, but wow, like this was good. And that's not something I'm accustomed to saying about things created by most like YouTube, like content creators, but yeah, amazing. And the lead star, like Sophie Wilde, was
phenomenal.
Oh my God. So, so good. So this one, if you've not seen it, I think it comes highly recommended by both of us.
Yes.
So let me read the IMDb.
Stop this now. Watch it and then come back.
When a group of friends discover how to conjure spirits using an embalmed hand, they become hooked on the new thrill until one of them goes too far and unleashes terrifying supernatural forces. That doesn't do it justice.
No, not at all. there's so many things I want to say about this movie, but this is one that I do not want to spoil for people because it is that good. I will say though, there are certain things that I really like in horror movies. One of them is I like when people get their comeuppance. You know, I love that.
Yeah.
But I also like when bad things happen to good people, like people who are trying their best. And this is a really, really great example of that.
It absolutely is. I think you really feel for all of the characters in this.
Also, shout out to Miranda Otto for being in this one too.
And she's the one I was kind of thinking of it too. It's like, even though things like happen and characters may say things that you're just like, oh no, don't do that. You really care about them and you really want them not to get like just ruined by the events in this movie. And oh boy, it's rough. And it's really, really, parts of it were like a hard watch. There is a sequence in like the middle of the film that if you have any issues with eye gore, you should avoid fully.
Yes.
And it's one of those things that just like especially hard to watch given the context for what's happening. Because, oh man, it's a lot there. The entire premise of the film is that they like, instead of doing drugs, they do basically like seances is the stand-in for like this sort of thing. And wow, it's a lot.
Yeah, and it's done in a way, like, I don't feel like it was heavy-handed in any way at all. I think the ending of this is perfect. Like, I know that it's going to get a sequel, but I don't feel like a sequel. Like, if a sequel hadn't been greenlit, I think it ends. The ending is fantastic.
The ending is perfect, but I think this is a film you could give a sequel to and do it correctly in enough of a way that I wouldn't be mad about it, if that makes sense. It feels like this is, there's a lot to this world and to this concept of this embalmed hand that shows up and can open pathways to the dead, or maybe the dead. Maybe we don't really know what it opens pathways to. That's sort of the question. And especially when you have this, like the characters are all just, oh man, so good. Like our main character, Mia, is just so still struggling after the death of her mother. So you have kind of that aspect in there. And then you have like her best friend and her best friend's little brother. And
like her second family.
Yeah, her second family is kind of helping her through. And she feels very estranged from her family. And it's kind of just like this perfect storm of why do kids do drugs? And then this is really like some, like, it's a really easy symbolism to pull from this film. And there's a lot more going on here other than a PSA, like don't do drugs, kids. This is not that movie.
Yeah.
Like I want to point out there, but the kind of, the analogy is really present in a really good way. So that's, I think, one of my top films of this year. And I think you'd agree.
Yeah. When we were comparing notes, you brought it up and I was like, I cannot believe that I didn't put that on my list because it was my favorite horror movie of this past year. I don't know why it just slipped my mind, but yeah, agreed. It's my, like, even though I have one more to discuss.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Technically not a movie though.
No.
This is my top movie. Next one I'm going to talk about, top TV show. So that's how I'm skirting this. That's how I'm getting around it.
Okay. Yeah.
So the last one on my list is the Netflix series, The Fall of the House of Usher.
Oh. Full disclosure, I'm only halfway through it right now. I'm behind. Oh my God, it's amazing.
It's so good. I never have any doubt at all about how good something is going to be if it's a Mike Flanagan joint.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like all of his work. I think everything he's done. I love what he does with these classic stories and the way he retells them in really interesting ways without ruining kind of the core of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like this is one that you, like, if you have any concept of popular culture and Edgar Allan Poe at all, that you don't need a synopsis, but the way it kind of weaves it together is interesting. So to secure their fortune and future, two ruthless siblings build a family dynasty that begins to crumble when their heirs mysteriously die one by one.
Yeah.
It's got all of your Mike Flanagan favorites in it.
Every single one.
That's why I'm like, I'm not even going to go through the cast, because if you are a Mike Flanagan fan, you know who all is in this. The performances are great. Stylistically, it's just done very well. And it does a really, really great job of weaving all of these different Poe stories together into a connective thread that makes sense. It doesn't feel forced at all. Yeah.
Well, I think the way that they tell these stories too are different enough from the originals, but keeping some of the core aspects of them intact. And I like that, because like this is not the Fall of the House of Usher. If you've read the Poe, like if you've read Poe's version, this is not it in a lot of ways, but it is it in other ways. And I'm only saying based on having seen the first half of it. But all the shorts that I've seen have been, like, all episodes are kind of named after a different short story. Mm-hmm. And some of them have through lines. I want to point out, like, some of them have through lines through.
Like, I would say that kind of the general framework of The Fall of the House of Usher is the, like, container for it. And, like, that's the house and every room is a different Poe story.
Yeah. Really amazing stuff. I really think it's the top, like, horror TV of the year. It's been one of my favorite shows this year so far that I've seen. And yeah, I'm really excited to finish it. And I think when I do finish it, we should talk about it a little bit more.
Oh, for sure. One of the things that really, 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 like, I knew, I was like, I'm in for this, is like Annabelle Lee is not something that a lot of people think about when they think about Poe.
Really?
Like, you know, people, they know the hits, like, you know, the big ones. But he finds a way to incorporate that into it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's gold. Mm-hmm. And what a, this is the last thing that Mike Flanagan is doing for Netflix.
Okay.
And what a fucking note to go out on.
I'm very excited to finish it because I don't have any concerns that he won't stick the landing.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Poe's work. I've read a lot of it, especially when I was younger. The only bit of theater I did was being in kind of like a retelling of a bunch of his stories. Like it, I've done very
that checks out.
I'm not a theater kid. We've said that plenty of times, but yeah, I really, really liked this. So,
and I posted about this. You probably saw my post in regards to this, but the thing I love about Mac Flanagan, and the thing that, like, my favorite kind of horror is the kind of horror that is both scares me and also makes me a little bit sad.
Yes.
And he is great at that. And it happens. He delivers again with this one. Like, oh man. Yeah. I'm kind of sad that this is the last thing he's doing with Netflix when they've just kind of given him like a blank check to do what he wants to do. But I'm eager to kind of see where he goes from here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because Hill House, Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, even Midnight Club, all of them great.
Yeah. Have all been like really great works. So what's he going to do next? I mm-hmm. guess we'll find out.
So what is your number one, your last one?
Yeah, this is going to, you do not agree with me on this one, and that's okay. It's okay.
I don't dislike it.
But. No, but you don't like it.
I don't like it. I don't.
Yeah. And one of the things I love, like I immediately watched this movie and was like, oh my God. And you immediately watched this movie and were like, not for me.
Yeah, people were saying that it's the scariest movie that they've seen this year, and I came out of it and I was like, what?
See, it was very scary to me. I do think this is probably one of the scariest movies I've seen this year, and that would be When Evil Lurks. And it is a film that was both written and directed by Damien Rugna. Is that correct? He's Argentinian, so this film was, I believe, filmed in Argentina.
I believe so.
Yeah. And oh man, it is a lot. The director's work I knew, so I was excited to watch this movie because he had done the 2017 Terrified, not Terrifier. I want to point out that's a totally different
totally
movie.
Different movie.
Totally different movie. But Terrified. And have you seen that one?
I have not.
Okay. So I loved that one, and this one feels like a further exploration of some of the themes that were put forth in Terrified. So maybe you won't like that one, but that was also one of my favorite movies that came out that year too. Now, the synopsis for this one from the ever beloved IMDb is, in a remote village, two brothers find a demon-infected man just about to give birth to evil itself. They decide to get rid of the body, only to end up unintentionally spreading chaos. And oh boy, is this a movie. Let me tell you.
I like the atmosphere that it creates. Yeah. Like, it's on my honorable, like it's not mm-hmm. for me, but I put it on my honorable mentions. I think it's a great riff on possession, and especially yes. like possession as being like communicable.
Yeah.
And there is one part that did get me. Like,
yeah,
it really did get
both
me.
Of us. What I love about this movie is a movie about possession. It's not about religion.
Mm-hmm.
This, which is something there's a ton of religious possession movies. You can, a dime a dozen out there, and a lot of them are really good. This movie took such an entirely different take on the concept that like I was just like, oh my God, because it builds this world where this is a thing that happens.
Yeah,
this is a thing that happens to people sometimes, and you just have to kind of either deal with it or figure it out, because the authorities, especially in a lot of places, don't care. So I read a great interview with the director, who was basically talking about how this whole thing came from his dissatisfaction with bureaucracy in Argentina, specifically about children and their working conditions, or working in some of the like the lower income areas, and how that a lot of them basically just gave like some of the work conditions would give like kids, there were much higher cancer rates in several areas, and how bureaucracy just ignored it and let it keep going. So like reading that after I watched this movie, I was like, oh, okay, this is like a really unexpected place that I didn't see this coming from. But I think that's the reason that this movie is not for the faint of heart. It has got a lot of extreme stuff in it, including bad things happen to kids in this movie.
Yeah.
Like there's no way around that. Like you should probably know that going in, if you're going to watch it, if that stuff bothers you.
Kids, plural.
Yes. Yes. But the first time it happens, you are just like, you know, something's going to happen. And I think that's the scene that both mm-hmm. you and I talk about. But like when something happens, you were just like, I gasped out loud.
Yeah, I was sitting in my living room watching it by myself, and I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. Yeah. Like I just felt it. But I will say, you know, you were talking about like the world that it creates, that I would like to know more about the lore.
There's, yes.
Like the instruments that are used and mm-hmm. everything. Like I found that very intriguing.
There's definitely like the film gives you just enough information for you to build a world around all this. So I don't feel like you're lacking anything. But yeah, I really would love another story set in this universe, which is, oh my God, it's so bleak. this whole world is so bleak. Like when you think about this world where people can just become possessed, and they call them like the equivalent of like the rotten is what they're called. Mm-hmm. And like that, and there's all these rules and everybody knows all these rules. Even if you've never seen a possessed person, you know the rules, and they're not even just like a folklore thing. This is the world that they live in, where you know the rules of what to do to not get possessed and how to take care of people that are possessed, like what you do with them. Oh man, I thought this movie was scary. It really affected me in a way that not a lot of movies managed to do. Like Talk to Me did it, where I got really genuinely like moments of,
yeah,
like this kind of anticipatory like horror, like in fear.
Now I feel like something's broken in me.
I don't think so. Cause I think it depends. Cause a lot of people were just like, I read some other reviews after I'd seen it. I read some other reviews of it. And people were just like, oh, I thought it was like boring for like the first 30 minutes. And I was like, no, I was there. Like, but I think it's okay. You know, it didn't grasp you. And I was just really the entire concept of, I like supernatural horror more in general than a lot of other things. So that probably plays a part in this as well. Yeah.
Fair enough. So but it did get an honorable mention.
It's fair. Yeah. I mean, It's a Wonderful Life was an honorable mention for me. Yeah. Do you have any other honorable mentions in there?
I do. Totally Killer was an honorable mention for me as well. Mm-hmm. Knock at the Cabin, I put as an honorable mention because that movie asked the question, will gays be responsible for the end of the world? And the answer is yes.
See, I have like a very strong reaction to Knock at the Cabin Door because I know how the film ends, but I read the book.
Yeah, but you weren't a huge fan of the ending of the book either.
Okay, so I love the author.
I have the book.
Yeah. I love the
I've
author.
I've just not read it yet.
I want to point out, like, I really love this author. And I understood what he was doing with the book. Like, the things they do with the book and the things that they do with the film are two entirely different things. I knew what he was doing with the book. And I hated the ending and understood it and don't think it's a bad book. It's one of those things where you have stories that are just like, oh, this was great, but I hated it. And I don't know what that, you know, like it's kind of one of those sort of situations with me because the author is
Paul Tremblay.
Yeah. Correct? Paul Tremblay. Mm-hmm. And he's written some of the stuff I love, like Head Full of Ghosts is amazing. Survivor Song, fantastic. Disappearance of Devil's Rock, like all the things that I read by him, I really love, except for Cabin at the End of the World. But I would recommend reading the novel because I do think it gives you an entirely different outcome on the story. And I think if you read the novel and you're like, I see why you did not like that, then I think that will make it more obvious.
I think I went into it expecting to be disappointed because it's M. Night Shyamalan and just track record has not been great, but I was pleasantly surprised by it. And it is, you know, people have the discussion about like, who of all the former wrestlers is the best actor? And like people want to say that it's The Rock, but like, I'm like, no, Dave Bautista is the best actor.
I didn't even think that was a question. Yeah. Dave Bautista is the best all around actor. John Cena is the best comedian.
Yeah. But this movie, I feel like he really got to kind of flex some of those muscles. Like he's very compelling in the movie.
Even in the trailer, he's very compelling. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's a really good actor. So I know he could probably carry, he probably carries this film. Like if I was going to wager. And I think that's what a lot of people were responding to is how good he is in it. And that's okay. It's okay that I didn't like it. And it's okay that other people do, but it's not even on my list.
The other thing I had on my honorable mention is not any type of visual media at all, but it's Slayers, a Buffyverse story. It's the 9-part Buffy adjacent Audible thing that came out. And I think actually it is the number one audiobook of the year.
Ah, good for them. Just based it's Amber Benson, right?
Amber Benson and Christopher Golden.
Yeah. Amber Benson, who is Tara, the TV show.
And a lot of the original voice talent comes back. I mean, there's one character who is part of this that is not voiced by the original person.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes with audio dramas, I have a hard time with them. Just because my brain just doesn't work that way. It's not, I'm not really an audiobook person either, but I binged this in like 3 days and each episode is an hour long.
Yeah, I have not checked it out yet, but I have seen that it's been topping the charts and has been very well received as a piece of the legacy of Buffy.
And I was listening to a podcast where they did an interview with Amber Benson and Christopher Golden, and I liked what she had to say about how doing this project was kind of a way for her and some of the other people who were part of it to kind of reclaim.
Oh yeah, I can Buffy. See that.
And the plan is for them to do more.
Okay.
In this universe, mm-hmm. but to kind of reclaim it and leave it in a more happy place than they left it when they were part of the show done by a particular person.
That sounds delightful.
Yes.
I look forward to that from them, and I wish them well in that endeavor. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah. But it's worth, if you don't have Audible, I did the month free trial and just binged through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. My honorable mentions would be in a film called Influencer, which did not get a theatrical release, but is a really fun, it's more of like a psychological horror film mm-hmm. about a woman who, there's a social media influencer that goes on vacation, ends up meeting this other woman, and the two of them become friends throughout this. But it's a really fascinating study in being content with your life and what dissatisfaction looks like and where it can take you. And I know that's very vague, but let me read I think there's an IMDb description so I can tell you what that says. While struggling on a solo backpacking trip in Thailand, social media influencer Madison meets CW, who travels with ease and shows her a more uninhibited way of living. But CW's interest in her takes a darker turn. I really liked this one mm-hmm. for a lot of different reasons. And I will say it's not one of those social media influencers are bad and vapid. Like, that's not the story here, because we see that story over and over again. This was, and I thought it was going to be when we put it on, I was like, oh, it's another one about taking down the social media influencer or something like that. And I was like, okay, sure, I'll watch it, whatever. I was like, oh no, this isn't what this is at all. Okay, this is really good. It's far more like psychological thriller. There's a lot of different aspects in it.
There's been a few of those.
Yeah. And this one is very much like the character that of CW is also in It's a Wonderful Knife. It's the aunt's, the lesbian aunt's girlfriend or wife.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the same actress that plays her. And she does a great job. So 100% really liked that one. It's one of my honorable mentions. I also really like, there's a Swedish slasher called Conference that's on Netflix. A lot of fun, very campy vibes, but a real brutal slasher at the same time. So a lot of fun. It reminds me of a film that came out earlier called Severance that was kind of in the same vein. It's a corporate retreat that goes horribly wrong.
Okay.
A lot of fun there. Did you see, and this one's going to be titled on me, Unwelcome?
No.
Okay. It's an Irish film about red caps, like the fairy red okay. caps. Oh yeah. No, I loved it. It was just it feels like it came right out of the 80s. Like it feels like, cause you had all those tiny monster movies in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I love them. I love all of them. I'll even watch Hobgoblins if you put it on, it's fine. But it came right out of that and was such a fun, really great throwback to those kind of movies without not taking itself seriously enough to be menacing. Really good. A lot of fun. So yeah, I it was really hard for me to pick these films because I think we all saw the big ones that came into the theater. Boogeyman, which I liked, don't get me wrong, the Stephen King adaptation.
Creature design in that was phenomenal.
Really great. Boogeyman mm-hmm. was a lot of fun. I didn't see The Nun 2, but I didn't see The Nun 1.
I've not seen the new Saw movie yet, and you know how much I love the Saw movies.
You do love the Saw movies.
I've heard that it's a good return to form.
I haven't seen it either. But also Evil Dead Rise. I had fun with Evil Dead Rise a lot. There's a lot to choose from in there. And there was also Scream 6.
Is this where we're going to end at?
You said you want to talk about it.
Oh, Scream. You had a good run. I honestly, if they try to do something else, I don't know if I'm going to be there for it. I may watch it for a perverse reason. They're doing
Seven. Seven is happening without the leads. So I don't know what we're going to do there.
The find out of that particular fuck around was real quick.
yeah, it was. I liked some aspects of Scream 6, but I think the script needed more passes at it to kind of make it more cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interesting storylines were kind of pushed aside to the less interesting stuff, but there was a lot of like, there were fun things in it. I think I can find something I love about every Scream movie, but I don't know what we're going to do after this.
Again, though, if this is the end, I'm okay with that because mm-hmm. like Gail finally got her call.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that whole scene, that is probably, I think that and the ladder over between the two buildings are
yeah.
probably my two favorite scenes yeah. in the movie.
There were some really good moments yeah. in the movie, a lot. And some of the identity of the killer I loved a lot. Other parts of it didn't make sense. There were certain parts that did make sense, and there were certain parts that I was like, you did what?
Yeah. And we got Kirby back.
We did get Kirby mm-hmm. back, even though she was mostly useless.
Yes.
She was really useless in this movie. It's fine.
She's not a very good agent.
No, but I did love her, like that actress. I really like that actress, so I love seeing her in things. So yeah, like if we end Scream here, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know? If we don't, we'll see. We'll see what they're going to do with it next, whether or not I'm on board. Yeah. So speaking of what we're going to do next, is there anything you're looking forward to in 2024? Like films or horror stuff?
I need to get a good list going. Like mm-hmm. I really lacked this year in keeping up with stuff as much as I wanted to just because of how busy I was. But I'm going to try to make more of an effort. I mean, obviously mm-hmm. I want to make more of an effort because I want us to have things to talk about. Because what's next is going to be more episodes. Yay!
Yeah, definitely more episodes. I mean, well, there's some pretty fun things coming out. Mm-hmm. Like Maxine comes out in 2024.
Okay, I'll believe it when I see it.
Oh, no, I think it's going to happen. Well, it was already slated for that. And then we should be getting Return to Silent Hill.
Yeah, I feel like we should have a trailer for Maxine at this point, though.
Yeah, we should, but yeah. Who knows? Well, the only movie we have a trailer for next year is like Night Swim, which comes out in the beginning of
January. I'm so excited about that.
I'm going to see it. Like, it's a haunted swimming pool. Let's see what you do with this.
I love haunted objects. That I also think Imaginary is going to be good.
I am on the fence about Imaginary. Mm-hmm. I'll see it. I'll definitely see it, but we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen enough of the your teddy bear comes to life, like your childhood friend, you know. We'll see. We'll see what they do with it, if they do anything fun. There's also supposedly a new Alien movie coming out.
Again, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, that one is, I'm not sure that's going to happen next year because we haven't gotten anything about it. And then David Eggers' next film is Nosferatu. So, yeah.
And from looking at the cast, going to be sexy.
Yeah, that's, yeah, it sure is going to be sexy.
We're
going to
want to fuck that vampire.
No, you're not supposed to. No, yeah. Yeah, I think that'll be fun. That's not coming out until next Christmas. So this time next year.
Yeah. I mean, the strike.
I'm not mad. Like,
yeah, oh, yeah.
I'm not complaining. That's why.
But
back.
Yeah.
But because there's that coming out, and then Jordan Peele is supposed to have a new film out.
And it's a Christmas one too, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. But there's no details about it.
I love
but it's
that.
Okay. We'll just see. Yeah. You know, I'm going to be there.
We trust him. Yeah,
yeah. We trust you. Do whatever you want, sir. Let us know when you're done. You take as much time as you need. But yeah, I think next year should be a lot of fun, both for horror and also for us to put out some fun new content for everybody.
Yeah.
Talk about a lot of new things.
If you all have any suggestions of things that you would like for us to cover or discuss, hit us up on mm-hmm. any of our socials.
Yeah.
Email us at culturecryptids@gmail.com. I had to remember the email address there for a second.
It's been a while.
Or any of our personal socials as well.
Yeah. And I think we have a bunch of stuff we want to tackle and mm-hmm. talk about too. So new episodes come in really soon.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to get us guested on a few other podcasts as well.
Oh, so, fancy.
Yeah, make other people listen to us who don't listen to our podcast.
Oh, no.
But yeah, got some good things in the works, so just be on the lookout. It's good to be back. It is like riding a bike a little bit, yeah. You know, which I was never good at, but well. I feel like I'm okay at this.
Well, you know, you already fell off, so it's time to come back.
Oh, man. Ouch. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. Until next time. Culture Cryptids is recorded, produced, and engineered by me, JD.
And me, Corey. You can find us on social media at Culture Cryptids on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Questions, comments, corrections, hate mail? Email us at culturecryptids@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.